Hey guys, I want to take a few moments to thank Sneak Tech Sneak Boots for their support of the show. They make it possible for me to keep it free, so please go check them out at sneaktech.com. I use them on all my hunts, and really they've upped my game, taken my stalks to the next level, so check them out. I also want to take the time to thank you, my listeners, for the support that you have given me, and I'd like to give back to those going that extra mile. So once a month, I will be giving away a pair of Sneak Tech boots and two t-shirts to three subscribers of the podcast who have left a comment or feedback on iTunes or Podbean. Thank you. Now let's roll into the next episode.
Hi, welcome to Interviews with the Hunting Masters, brought to you by Sneak Tech Sneak Boot and Phoenix Shooting Bags. Today we're going to do a little campfire session with Paul Medell. And you know, listen to some of his elk hunting stories. What's going on, Paul?
Oh, everything's good, John. Thanks a bunch for having me on again. I appreciate it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, man. Our listeners really enjoy your podcast, and I enjoy your knowledge, and you always seem to have a great attitude, and it's always a pleasure to have you on.
Hey, no problem. When we're talking elk, I mean, you can't go wrong. And for me, that's, you know, that's how the world revolves when it comes to myself as far as everything. Oh, I'm not kidding you. I mean, elk is just on my mind all the time. And so being able to share information along that line or even, you know, hunting stories, not very often do I get to do that. Does someone ask to share a hunting story? And so that's kind of cool to be able to focus on that. There's a lot of them. I wouldn't even know where to start on them, but so maybe you can help me in that direction.
I like hunting stories because I think the savvy hunter can listen to a story and listen to, especially if you're a good storyteller, you know, I think you can listen to the things that you did on that hunt and take something from it and learn from it. You know, it doesn't always have to be an instructional podcast. I think to learn something, I've learned a lot from other people's stories. You know, if you pay attention to what they're saying, you can really pick apart, you know, if they're talking about what they did on the stalk or the thing that they did or how it, you know. And you just listen to those things, and those are like experiences that you can kind of add into your repertoire and you know, recall on to when you're faced with those same situations. You know, I like stories. I think they're good. They're, you know, entertaining, and of course, but a good teaching point. So,
well, they're real life things. You know, it's not like you're trying to share a tip with somebody that they might be able to use, you know, this year in their elk hunting adventures. We're more of what the story, it's like, okay, there was purpose behind it. What was the outcome? What were all the details in between it for it to happen? You know, to me, and when I tell a story, it's like I need to have people appreciate the sounds that I was making and the sounds the elk made, and this is why my decision was to go this route now or not to say anything or whatever. And that's how I try to share a story, you know, when they're real life,
right?
Like somebody told you something and you're sharing that. No, you can see it playing out in your mind. And I usually have a reason why I'm going a direction, and it's not always right, but I mean, you still do it. And it's fun that way because I think people can really, they live it along with you as you share that story.
Absolutely. We're getting pretty close to elk season here. I mean, we're middle of August. It's coming up hot. So
yeah, here it's August 30th in Idaho. It starts.
Yeah, that's crazy.
And it's still smoky. Are you have smoke out there?
Not really. No.
No. No. Oh, here it's pretty smoky. I think we're getting a lot of the California smoke. Plus, we have our own fires. And those are always something that we have to deal with. I get a lot of questions on that, if the smoke really bothers them that much, or do we hunt elk in it? And we have elk laying on the ground at times with these types of fires where you can't even see 300 yards. I mean, nothing.
Oh, yeah.
And so, you know, you can still hunt them in those, in that environment. The elk really don't go anywhere, you know, like people think they would. they're not running for their lives. They don't think like we do, you know, a lot of times. And they don't have structures they're worried about saving either. So,
That's true.
I was just curious if it was. But, it's all good.
No, we've been getting crazy monsoons, though. I mean,
oh,
sorry, we needed the rain, but it's been like dust storm and wind storm after wind storm. And I mean, I can't tell you how many trees are down in and around my neighborhood around here. Like, and we're supposed to get, I think we'll get another one tonight. We've had probably five in the last week, you know, they're rolling in the afternoon. And I mean, it's pretty typical for us to have it, but usually by now they start tapering off. I feel like they're getting more frequent, you know, usually July, like end of July, beginning, or by the beginning part of August, they start, you know, tapering off a little bit, but it's pretty intense, which is good. Like I said, it's good. We need the rain. We need the moisture, but mosquitoes get really bad right now, and we didn't have any mosquitoes up until like 2 weeks ago. So,
it's gotten warm there and muggy.
Well, it's always warm here.
That's for sure.
That's
one
thing you can say. One
cold day, and then they're gone. Those mosquitoes are gone. Come elk hunting season, even August 30th. I mean, all the years I've hunted here, I've hardly ever seen one mosquito come elk season. And like I say, that's from August 30th on. There are none. And so if folks are wondering about that, even in a lot of the other states I've hunted, I can't ever recall, you know, by September 1st that there's any real problem with mosquitoes at all. When you get an elk down, now you can have a lot of problems with those yellow jackets and the horse flies, but really the mosquito population is pretty much nil by then.
Yeah, it's weird over here. Once in a while you get a lot of, you know, some years you get a lot of mosquitoes, others you don't have any at all, just the timing of the rains. And I remember probably five years ago, my cousin Anthony drew a 6B tag archery, and man, I literally took I was wearing base layer bottoms on. I ended up taking them off and wrapping them around my head just to keep the mosquitoes out of my ears and off my neck. It was so bad. Just terrible.
That's brutal.
Terrible. Yeah, I felt like I was up in Canada hunting bears in June or something.
That's terrible. Yeah, that's not even fun. That's not even enjoyable. If it was like that, I would probably have to pass on that time frame until I knew they subsided some.
Yeah, it's weird. Like, it's not always like that. And plus, well, 6B is kind of a little bit lower in elevation, like 5,000, 6,000 feet max the most part. So I think that had a lot to do with it. But that was the timing of the rain. So we got a lot of late August, early September rain. And I think that's kind of why it was. Anyway. Actually, I remember last time I went to Idaho, I got killed by no-see-ums. You have a bunch of that going on?
I don't recall any of those.
Yeah. I got
must be just the area that you're in, but no, we really don't experience stuff like that.
Okay, that's good. Cause
no, if you get too low, you'll be in the rattlesnake, so I know that. I don't like that.
No, nobody likes rattlesnakes.
Nope.
So, anyway, you know, as I mentioned, I have you on to talk about some stories, and if you could share with us a story where maybe you learned something about elk hunting or changed something about the way you hunt, maybe had a teaching moment for you.
They're all that way.
I knew you were going to say that.
They seem in thoughts in your mind, you know, because a lot of times
I lost you.
I was saying that I'm one of those that have, you know, researched elk for so many years. And so I depend on a lot of the vocalization that they use. And so when I see a plan come together and things that are working and things that don't, it just helps to refresh my memory that, hey, you know, I need to make sure I fall back on this or that. And boy, being in real life encounters, they're the best teachings right? I mean, there is nothing better out there than the elk themselves. So, you know, you put all that into perspective, and at the same time, I apply all that in my hunting situations. I mean, it's just, if I'm working a bull real quick and he's responding to my cow calls and no bugle, I drop the bugle. I'm going to go ahead and stick with what's going to work with this bull. And so you just never know. But there was I had a bull that here's a story for you. I had a bull that it was second to the last day of the season. And I'd helped others, you know, calling for them. And I still hadn't filled the tag yet, and which was not a big deal. But at the same time, I wanted to. And so it was the night before the last day, and I got into an area, and I was about a little over a mile from my rig. I was by myself, and not much was going on. I dropped over into this one little bowl and was listening, and now it's starting to get dark. And I have like about 10 minutes before dark, and I see two or three cows. It was two or three that were just below me, and they came out about 45 yards from me. I didn't even know I was there. I hadn't made a call at that point. I did previous and with no response, but at that point when I saw the cows, I hadn't. And they filed in front of me, and I'm looking at them like, there's one day left for elk season, you know, as a bow hunter. But I didn't want to shoot a cow. I just, that's my personal thing, and I didn't want to. And then I hear a bull bugle just below them. And so I knew the bull was with those cows, and I thought, man, if he comes through there, I can still get a shot before dark. But I didn't really want to call because, I mean, it was just so – I wanted to, but I didn't. And so I just stayed patient, and I thought, I think he might come right there on the same trail those cows did. And so I wait. It's almost dark now, and he bugles again. I had bugled. He bugles again, and now he's below that trail. And I'm like, oh. And I never did see him. He was in the timber. So I backed out, and I thought, okay, I know he's not going anywhere. When you have elk in an area right near dark, that's where they'll be in the morning. They don't go very far from there. And this happens, I don't care where unit you hunt or what state, that's just how they are. And so I went ahead and I backed out, and I thought, I'll come back in the morning. As a matter of fact, my son, I'll grab him, and we'll both go in there, and we'll see where these elk are, and we'll see if we can, you know, pull this bull out. And this was a real learning thing for me. This was something that I hadn't seen a lot of, but I do now and then, and I think this will help a lot of folks because I get a lot of questions about situations like the one I was in and what could have went wrong. And so in this particular one, we went back into the area right at daybreak. We're up on the hillside, and we get up in there, and my son bugles a couple of times as we're walking up, and we're probably a half mile from the rig, maybe three quarters, and the bull bugles. So we move up a little bit closer, try to get there, and we bugle. My son bugles. I'm not bugling. It's just Paul. And so he bugles. The bull answers again. So now we're probably 300 yards away from this bull. So we bugle. Bull bugles again. Doesn't move. So that tells me right now that I'm dealing with a herd bull. He's not moving.
Right.
A satellite generally will start creeping in and cut the distance if he's going to call at all. Well, this bull hung tight. He would not move. And so, which was fine. And so I told my son, I said, all right, this is the last day. I says, you keep him talking every couple minutes, and I'm going to slip in on this guy. Silent. I bet it's the same bull. There's almost no question in my mind. It's the same spot, same area. So I start slipping in. I can hear the bull bugling. I even see him a little bit as I'm moving through the timber. As I get about maybe 100, 125 yards, I'm being patient, taking my time. He's not going anywhere. And my son's staying back. He's still staying in that 3-350 range, putting no pressure on him. And when you do that, a lot of times those bulls will stay anchored. They won't move. And he did.
Right.
He read that chapter. He stayed right there. And so as I'm slipping in, even with experience, and you would think that I would make no mistakes, I have tunnel vision on this bull. And what I don't see at 100, 125 yards is there's three cows and a spike standing to my right. And I mean, I'm less than 20 yards from him. I didn't even see him. And as soon as I locked eyes with him, you can imagine, they locked eyes with me, and they blew out of there. And they took off. They run up in the direction to where that bull was, and off they go to the top of the hill, which wasn't very far, maybe another couple hundred yards, and they dropped over. And so I go back and get my son, like, you know, big rookie mistake here. We just can't even believe that I did that. And, you know, but it happens. Those are just things that happen sometimes. But we didn't give up. So now we sit there and regather our thoughts. And what we're going to do next. I said, let's give them like 15 minutes. We won't do anything. We're just going to stay over here. Let these things mellow out. So I said, I don't think they went far. The bull has no idea why those cows ran. The cows in the spike saw me, but the bull never saw anything. So I don't think they're really that boogered. They didn't smell me. They just saw me.
Mm-hmm.
And so they took off. And like I said, we waited. And so now we creep up to the top of the hill. We're creeping up, side healing, just over the other side of the ridge, just slowly moving, because I know they ran over there somewhere. And
mm-hmm.
I told my son, I said, you know what, I think maybe we'll go ahead and bugle right here and see if we can locate him. So he's getting ready to bugle, and the bull bugles on his own before we can ever bugle. Yeah, so he's to my left. He's on the same. He's almost on the same plane as me. But he's probably 250 yards away, something like that. Well, he had already heard my son bugling and bugling and bugling and blah, blah, blah. Not a big deal, but I thought, we're going to change this up. And so now we got underneath the bull. The wind's coming down. And that's one of my favorite ways to call elk, is I like being under them. I call so many more bulls in as they come down the mountain back to us, even if they're in their bedding area. My other favorite is if I'm on the same level, if the wind will hold up and everything's good. But I there's no question in my mind, we call way more elk back down to us than we do above us or left or right. So, you know, a lot of times you try to stay with your strengths when you're in a situation like this, and you're behind the eight ball. It's the last day. This is it. And so that's how you kind of think. And so anyway, I get my son down there, and now we're underneath this bull, probably 100 yards away from him. And every once in a while, I can hear him. And he'll make a little bit of a bugle. Have you ever heard that when they get to their, like, they want a bed there, and they want to just give that little...
Yep.
And that's what he was doing. He's just kind of giving that little bed bugle right there. There was no real rutting going on. There was no hot cow. And that's kind of what he was doing. And so as I set my son at the bottom of that hunter jar, I said, what I want you to do is I want you to just give some super soft cow calls. I mean, so soft that I probably couldn't even hear you. And so that's what he decided to do. You know, that was the plan we came up with. And I set him there, and I said, you got to hide. Now, this is years ago, and Paul wasn't that old. And I said, I just want you to give some super soft ones. And as a matter of fact, I said, what's going to happen is that bull's probably going to try to call you to him, and that's going to ignite him enough that I'm going to try to get up there before he gets nervous and take this bull. Well, here's where things don't go quite to plan. I leave him there. I get about 30 yards from Paul. I'm going straight up the mountain, and it's hundreds of feet to get up to where this bull is. He's well above him. So now I'm slipping up the mountain. At 30 yards, I cannot hear Paul cow calling. That's how soft he's calling. But I could hear the bull giving what we call that roundup bugle. He would just give it very low, and he's trying to call the cow up to him is what he was doing. And I knew that's what he was going to do. There was no question. If he responded, he was going to call that cow. And so I'm trying to slip up there in time, because they only buy that for a few minutes. 6-7 minutes, they get nervous, something's not right, and they will move off at times. And so I knew my time was short. And so I got up there. Now I get up to the point where I can hear him bugle for the cow, and he's just in the timber to my right, and he's above me, babe, I would say maybe 40 yards. I can't see anything. It's thick.
Wow.
Well, all of a sudden, out walked a cow, and then a second cow. And they're walking on a trail just above me. And I'm like, he's got to come out right there. Well, those two cows stop. One of them walks right past me. She gets to the edge, like the little bench that I'm on, and looks down toward my son. I can't not hear him cow calling. But I know he hasn't stopped. He's still calling.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, this cow starts slipping down toward my son. And I'm like, what? No way. She's going to slip down there and see him and blow the whole thing and come running back. I know she is. About this time, here comes that third cow, and here comes the spike. And, I mean, these things are in range of me. I mean, they're just right above me. They're standing there. I have no idea I'm there. I can hear the bull still making some little odd sounds. He wasn't really bugling. He was just making some little groans and moans, and once in a while he would call up that cow. But he's right in the timber, and he wouldn't come out. And so I'm waiting, and all of a sudden this cow disappears, and she's walking down the hill. And I'm like, she's going to bust him. I know it. I know she's going to bust him. And she's down there. I mean, a full minute goes by, and all of a sudden the bull bugles again, and now he's above me. He has went, instead of taking that trail where the cows and spikes were, he went above them. For whatever reason, he came around him, and now he's coming out somewhere on the point where she went down, because I can hear him, but I can't see him. And then I'm going to say a couple minutes total go by. I'm sitting right there. I have an arrow knocked. I'm on one knee, and I'm still wanting that bull. I still haven't seen him. I just hear him. And all of a sudden, here comes this cow. I mean, she is coming up like there's something wrong. And she comes up, she hits that little trail, which is actually, I know what it was. It was 28 yards to that trail. She walks across that trail really quick, and she's going back to where they came from. And I knew right then the jig was up. I knew right then there's something wrong. And so now I'm waiting tensely because I'm thinking all of them are going to come at that 28-yard trail. They have to. And just in my gut, they have to, you know. And so she walks through, then the next cow, and then comes the spike. And on the third cow that's walking through, he has his nose up her rear end. He is just pushing her with his nose right in his rear end. And I watch him come through, and they're right on that 28-yard trail. As soon as they hit a window, and I mean it's just timber all through there, as soon as they hit this little window, which was about 2 feet wide, which is plenty to get an arrow through, but still it's a window, I hit him with a nervous grunt, and I drew my bow at exactly the same time. I just went with my voice is what I did. And he stopped right there and just stared. And when I did, when he did that, the arrow went right through him. I saw it hit him, and he took running off right there, and he was a nice 6x6. And he goes taking off right there. So now I'm just sitting there listening to all this ruckus running everywhere. And, you know, I don't see the bull. He takes off as well. So I kind of take an arrow out of my quiver, and I've always taught my son there, when you're up there in these just a lot of dense areas like that, take an arrow out of your quiver right where you made the shot and stick it in the ground if you're going to leave the spot. And that way the fledgings, you can see them from everywhere, you know. So that's what I did. I stuck it out, and then I went down looking for him. He didn't even know anything really even happened. I go down there, and I kind of told him a little bit what was going on. I just hit the bull. I said, did you see the cow come down? And he said, no, I never saw anything. I said, well, she saw you. She knew you were there. She probably went down investigating why that cow wasn't coming to his demands. And she spotted him, or a piece of him. Who knows what he was doing down there? I have no idea. But he was calling, but she spotted that sentry cow nailed him. And over the years, I've seen this happen many times where they come sneaking around as the caller looking. And if they don't see what they think they should, or they see you, and off they go. And many times I've asked the other person, you know, did you see the cow come? No, never saw anything. Because you get tunnel vision. All you think about is that sound you hear up there of the bull. And that's what happened there. But I was very fortunate. And my son kept that bull active enough that I got up there. And I ended up taking that bull. Went 55 yards. And he was laying there piled up. But the point is how we kind of did it there. Instead of going back to bugling and try to do the same old thing, I thought, we're going to get him to try to call that cow up. And then, of course, she throws a wrench in it and comes down. And I thought for sure that if it went blowing out of there in another direction and never came back up, they would have took it off out of there, and who knows what would have happened. But we were just fortunate. She came back up to hook up with the little group to take them away from it. And it cost them.
Yep. Well, that's a good story, though.
So that worked out good. That was one of those hunts. I think that was actually the third bull I had killed on the very last day. And so you hate winding it down that tight sometimes, but, you know, these things come up.
I feel like almost everything I kill is on the last day.
That's a lot
of
pressure.
I don't know if it's like the reason is because, well, I mean, let's put it this way. Most of my seasons are 7 days at a time. Like, you know, I travel a lot to hunt, so it's not like I get to go for 2 weeks, you know, to one state and, you know, or go spend a month somewhere else. But so that probably has a lot to do with it. It probably takes me 4 or 5 days to figure it out. And then, you know, three days of solid hunting. But
no, I understand that. And then if I had that short a time span, I would be a lot less picky too.
Well, that is true. I have become a lot less picky over the years because of that.
Well, you have to when you only got a few days and you've never been to the area.
So, yeah, and I, what I started doing is now I started frequenting some of the same states and hunting the same areas. So now I'm starting to kind of like, you know, get a little bit more picky and choosy about those ones that I've been to before. But,
No, that makes sense. Oh, heck yeah. I mean, you know, and those – and those can have a lot of stories in themselves. And, you know, it's nice to hear success stories and whatnot, but a lot of times even stories where the success wasn't had, you still learned so much from them.
Oh,
because,
I think
you know what went good and what went wrong? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, I mean, they're all a teaching aid, and that's what we try to do with ourselves as we're out there. We're not just going through the motions, hopefully, but we're trying to understand why something worked and why something didn't work. So maybe we can apply that when we're in a similar situation. I know, you know, not every situation is the same, and the same goes with us. If I talked about 25 bulls we've killed, I bet you I have a little story different about them all. It wasn't like I did this one thing or two things every time and it worked. No, not even close.
No.
And so that's what makes it pretty cool, is to be kind of versatile. And the more you're out there building that experience, from experience, that's where you build, you know, coming from the gut of trying to reach down and doing what you think is going to be the best, give you the best odds right there. So, yeah, you know, it's a lot of different things. It was like that saying, okay, instead of going back to the bugle, we're going to go to the cow call. Does this mean a bugle would have never worked? No, but it just gave me the right feeling that we just ran him off with that kind of, you know, there was some association there. If it was the next day, there's no way he's thinking about that. But when we're talking 15 minutes prior, I like to mix it up a little bit just to maybe not have given him the chance to maybe booger him from that same sound. And that was why we switched it up, and it worked. And, you know, so you go, okay, that worked good. And you remember those things, you know, and you remember that dang cow leaving there. So you always try to, I actually have other stories where that cow, or, you know, a lead cow like that came down and tried to mess things up again. And so I really look for her these days. Oh, yeah, because I do a lot of the calling. And so I look for that sneaky rascal coming in. And I've seen him a few times. In most cases, I don't see him, but because I don't think they are coming. You know, when you're working a herd bull, a lot of times you try to get quick reaction out of them, very, very quick. And so this kind of alleviates and takes her out of that equation, because he's the defense mechanism, and you get him to pound. I mean, he just comes right now. He's on full pill. He's done. And so, you know, you try to play him from that respect when possible.
I had a similar, almost exact this year in only it didn't work out for us, but in Utah last season, where the bull, there was two bulls above us. One was clearly a satellite bull, and I could tell the other one was the herd bull, and there was cows. I could hear the cows talking, and we were below them, and I had a spike and a cow come down first before the bull got there, and basically kind of pegged us, but the bull was still coming, but I had to shut up because I didn't want to make sounds while those, you know, the other two were looking at us, and I didn't have a caller behind me, because I was calling for myself at that point. And that like lead cow, and he, like I said, she had a spike with her, kind of screwed everything up for me. But I finally caught a glimpse of the big bull. It would have been a nice bull to get, but I could see his rack going through the aspens, or quakies rather. So, well, which I've had that happen a few times.
Yeah, no, I understand what you mean, and I think that's why so many times these days we try to tailor our sounds that's going to provoke the bull first, and that's what we've kind of steered ourselves in that direction, so we don't do a lot of cold calling or, you know, hardly any cow sounds primarily, and I'm talking about for the majority of the encounters, not all of them, just like the story I just told. I mean, that was when we did use some. But for most situations, you know, we try to stay away from that. And the only reason in the other one is I really felt in my gut, so to speak, that he was going to try to call that cow. And that was going to be my opening. And it worked out that way. But the point is that a lot of times, we try to stay more with the bull sounds. And it seems like we're producing more of the bull's to make a physical appearance,
right.
Much more so than having a cow or spike come. And so
yeah,
it's worked well for us, and those are some of the things we kind of reach back on these days.
Yeah, I had a lot of interesting experiences on that Utah hunt, but like that didn't happen.
I'll bet.
that didn't happen to me before. Like I almost stepped on a spike. I was hunting by myself at this point. It was middle of the day, and I sent Shane, who was my cameraman. We were both starving, but I'm like, listen, I don't want to leave this area. Like, if you want to hike back up this ridge, the truck's right up there. I'm going to stay down, you know. I'm going to stay down here, hike up there, grab us food, and bring it back down here or whatever, and I'll meet you, you know, in a little bit. We had radios and everything, so I knew we can sync up pretty easy.
So you guys weren't carrying packs with you?
We were, but we had planned on like taking a break, but you know, like going back up to the truck and moving,
oh, okay.
You know, moving spots or whatever. And we just kind of like left everything at the truck for some reason. I don't know. Like I had my pack, but I didn't have food in it. I don't know. It was just a stupid, ill-planned scenario. But it kind of worked out for me. I mean, it kind of worked out for me and didn't work out for me because I didn't end up shooting the bull because it wasn't something I wanted to shoot. But it was kind of a cool situation. I'm kind of heard one of those lazy bed bugles that you were talking about earlier. I was like, oh, son of a gun, this guy's like close, you know? So I start making my way and I get to this point where it's kind of real thick, like, I don't even know what to call them. I want to say they're like almost like willows, but it's like some kind of a underbrush that is growing underneath the Quakeys. And it's not necessarily like baby Quakeys or anything like that. I don't know exactly what it is, but it's pretty like, it's like waist high. Anyway,
mm-hmm.
So I'm kind of like making my way through on these elk trails because that's the only way you can navigate through there is that, you know, they, you know, plow trails through it. And I get to a spot and I can see the bull's antlers. And it turns out it's actually three bulls down there. And they're all just bachelored up. They're all just together. You know, they're smaller bulls, especially for Utah, you know, like 280-ish
mm-hmm.
size bulls. And I was like, huh, you know, I'm wondering if there's another bull. So I keep kind of getting closer and closer, and I'm about 80 yards from them now. And I literally took one more step. Like I was moving real slow because I was that close already to them, you know, and I took one more step and 2 yards in front of me, a spike pops up. Like, it's like,
give you a heart
attack with me. Scared him. Piss out of me. And then another one was another spike below him, about 10 yards below him, going down this ridge. And I was like, what the hell, man? It's like five bulls in here, you know, none of them shooters, but five bulls right here. And I just stood there motionless. And those spikes, because I had like a tree right behind me, so I don't know if he like could tell that I was something or not, but we had a stand. I don't know. It felt like forever, but it was probably only about 5 minutes. And he finally turned around and he walked away. They just walked away and he went down to those other bulls and the other bulls just stood up and they just kind of walked away. It wasn't like they were like busting out of there or anything like that.
Yeah.
I guess my take home for that whole situation was one, like you said, not getting tunnel vision on the other thing. But, is that sometimes if you think the jig is up, it might not be up, you know, like if Spike was on the plate for me, or even those other bulls were on the plate for me, once that other bull turned around and started walking away, I could easily drove back and made a shot on that, you know, those other bulls below me.
Right.
So there's always,
no,
there's
you
always
never
something.
Know. Yeah.
Always something.
Oh, heck yeah.
It, you know?
Oh, yeah, you can always walk away from the elk woods learning something. Even if you didn't come across elk, you know, you shouldn't have been there then. You say, okay, I'm going to erase that one out of there. I think, you know, and that's a huge mistake I think a lot of people make, is they get – and they put all their eggs in one basket, and they say, oh, I'm going to hunt this draw for 5 days, and they get over there and there's really not much there. But they stay there. they think that something's going to materialize, I guess, out of thin air, or something's going to get pushed, or the odds of this happening are so bad. You know, you got to be mobile enough to get out of these areas and go where the elk are, because if there's no elk there, you're just spinning your wheels. I mean, you know, it just doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
So, but that's interesting. Yeah, I don't think I've ever come 2 yards from a spike and almost stepped on.
It had been raining a bunch, so the ground was super, super quiet. I was like a ninja moving through there. But and I, of course, I had the wind right and everything.
Yeah.
But I was so focused. I mean, had I probably been paying more attention, I probably would have seen it, you know, his spike sticking out. But yeah, it was weird. I've never had that happen before ever. Never got that close to an elk that, especially that I didn't want to get close to.
But you did see the other bull. You saw the other bull. The bigger bull was there, but he was only,
I could see
he was in the 280 range. You said.
Yeah, he wasn't. He was a 5x5,
which is really a nice bull anywhere else. You know, I mean,
bull
280 is like, wow. I mean, that's a you don't even think twice about taking that thing.
Oh yeah, absolutely. If I was on an OTC tag, I waited 10 years for that tag. I was going.
Oh yeah,
like
I hear you.
I was, you know, 340 or better.
Yeah,
you know, that was my goal, which I achieved, thank God. But
and you know, Utah has that to offer. You know, I mean, it's a It's a good state if you can, wait the time out to draw. As you get older, it gets tougher, you know. It really does, unless if you're following point creep like that. Holy cow.
Well, they have that once, like that. What they do is they make you wait. Once you draw it, they make you wait 2 years. And that kind of supposed to help with point creep, but I don't know. So now, you know, I got to wait 2 years before I can even start putting in there again. So the chances of me drawing it again, well, shit, I'll be in my mid-50s if you know, the points don't get that
very
much.
You're still young.
Yeah. You know,
I see, you know, online a lot that you've been going through quite the workout program, too, and that right there will help so much. I mean, you know, to give you that youthful feel. Even as you get older and older, you it really does make a difference. I mean, look at me. I'm in my 60s, and I can tell a huge difference as to working out, you know, on a year-round basis as opposed to not doing it. So, man, you got a long way to go.
Oh, yeah. It'll make or break you. Yeah. Well, yeah. I hope I have a long way. I plan to hunt for as long as I possibly can, and that's why
I don't put a number on what I do.
Yeah.
No, hopefully our health stays good, and we're good to go then.
God bless.
Those are things that are hard to predict.
Yeah, you know, it's crazy. I have an aunt right now that she's, you know, 67, and now she just out of nowhere got cancer, and you know, it's like you never know.
Oh wow!
You never know.
No, you don't.
Situation.
For sure. Well, hope she does okay.
Yeah, we're all pulling for her. So.
Oh yeah, man.
Tell me one of your most outrageous hunting stories that, you know, something that like really stands out that. Maybe
you know, maybe that goes by definition. I mean, what's outrageous to me might not be outrageous to you. And I mean, I've been in some situations where I feel I'll never forget that type of deal. And then I've taken so many elk that some I have to actually go look at the horns on the wall or a mount or something. So it brings back the memory like, oh, yeah. But then there's those couple that are just like, I don't know if others are like this, but there's like a couple of them that are in my mind that I seem to think about them even once a week, sometimes sooner, about those two different bulls. And, you know, I mean, and everything else goes by the wayside, but there's just something about those things that burned or etched itself in my memory because of the uniqueness to it. And one happened when Paul was probably, Paul's 40, and this one when he was, I think it was around 16 years old, and it was a, And I bring that up because it really etched that into my memory. And this kid has killed one every year since he was 12 years old. And so,
wow.
To say, okay, how come that one stands out? And I can't even tell you some of the others unless I go back and really try to think, oh, this bull and this bull and this bull. I just they're just not there in my head right now. But this one,
right.
There's two of them actually, but one of them, I think, carries the most weight. For me, it always has. I've told the story before, but never to you, or probably not, none of your listeners have ever heard it. But is this one was so different. And one thing I learned about Paul at a very early age, he would go hunting with me when he was five, and uh-huh. five, six, seven, all the way. And one thing I always knew about him, he's not like his dad. I'm a hyper person. I'm everything, you know, I get so involved into a conversation or whatever it is that I'm excited about, just like anybody. Everybody has those strengths and those passions for what they enjoy. Me, it happens to be
right.
elk. But I always noticed about Paul having the most calm nature about him. And maybe I didn't notice it as much until I started taking a lot of people out. This has a lot to do with the story. and I've
okay.
taken, I mean, several hundred people out over the years. And I noticed most of them lack the calmness. They get excited. They're shaking like a leaf. They can't even get their arrow on the quiver as this bull's coming in. They get so excited, which is good. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. That's that adrenaline going through you. And, I mean, this is what you've been waiting for all year. I mean, and they're newer hunters usually. But I saw right in the very beginning that Paul had this nature about him that was just very unusual, very unusual. Didn't get rattled, nothing. And, I mean,
uh-huh.
he killed the bull at 12, one at 13, 14, 15, and at 16. And, I mean, and I've called them all in. And so I'm right there. I see it. And I'm just like, and, I mean, we're close. When I'm calling for Paul, he's calling for me, just so people even know these days, rare is the time we're even 30 yards away. Most of the time we're within 15, 20 yards, but we call
mm-hmm.
for each other because we like it so much, not because we have to. We could probably, either one of us, kill almost every bull we've ever killed. That's how close they come to us. But
uh-huh.
it's just that it's so cool to be able to call for one another because we both enjoy it that much. And we hunt together, so we can pack meat together, you know, in a lot of situations.
Right.
But on this one day, we're heading up the mountain. We had parked the rig, and we heard a bugle off to our right. And we're talking August the 30th. They're not really bugling hardly at all at that time, generally. But
uh-huh.
we heard a bull, but we had this spot we wanted to go to. It's one of those, we're walking by that bull because we want to go over here. We just wanted to be in this one area that we were familiar with, and the elk had just, it had always been a good area. So, you know, it's not unusual for hunters who are focused like that to walk away from bull just to get over this way. And that's what we
uh-huh.
did. And so we're heading up the mountain. It's just after daylight. We head up, we break over into one of these benches, and it's kind of steep. We're going up, and we're, boys, I look back, we're well over a mile, actually, from the rig by now. And, I mean, through rough country, there's no trails. We take nothing like that. We usually are boondocking. And so as we're coming up, we hit this one bench, and there's like a half a dozen cows just standing there. We hadn't heard a bugle
uh-huh.
up there at all. Didn't even know these elk were there. And when we did, and I'm talking 30, 35 yards, it's one of those,
oh, wow.
you know, trying to look like a bush, but maybe sound like an elk, you know, try to give it a little cow call or something. And I got there, and I mean, they were locked on us, just staring right at. And we didn't want to shoot a cow, even. I didn't, and Paul didn't
right.
either, even at that age, because, you know, we usually are pretty decent about calling the elk in. And so as soon as we saw him, and we knew seconds are going by, and I could see every muscle tensing up on him, I looked at my son, and I just said, we got to run at him. We got to run at him right now and get him out of there. And so it was just, that was the first thing that came to my mind. I mean, how do you have time to think and evaluate? It's just, boom, this is what I got to do. And I knew as soon as I got there, I got to scream the bugle and hope there's a bull right there. It's August 30th. I didn't know for sure. So we run up, because we're a long way from where we ever heard the first bugle. I mean, we're not anywhere near that bull. We, like I said,
right.
proceeded up the mountain. And so as we scatter the cows, they not only went running, I could hear cows and other elk, whatever they all were. I couldn't see them in the timber. There was a mixture of timber and aspens. You could just hear it sound like elephants running. Crash! And, I mean, it was like, man, we just busted like 20 elk out of there.
Jeez.
Like I say, all we saw were those ones. And as soon as I got just about where they were and still in some cover, I just ripped off a gnarly bugle, just trying to call them back. and that was pretty healthy bugle, pretty abrasive. Nothing happened. I waited a few seconds. I hit a second one. I can still hear these elk running. Nothing. I'm trying to let the bull know that that there must be a bull around, that I'm trying to call his cows back, and this is why they're running. And so I'm not cow calling at all. And on the third bugle, I got cut off from about, I would roughly estimate 300 yards away. And when he bugled, I went, that is a good bull. And he just screamed when he bugled. He's well above us. And this bull, all we could hear, my son and I were standing side by side, all we could hear was running. And I mean, he was running fast. Let me tell you something. A bull elk can cover 300 yards in nothing flat, folks, a lot faster than you ever even thought of. And, I mean, this is a lot of downfall and crap. This bull is running, and he is screaming and bugling the entire way. And I'm cutting him off now, and I'm trying to wave to my son, you know, get right over here. I'm going to get right here, and I'm on a bench. And so I'm saying, I'm going to get just below the bench, just a little bit under this bench, so he has to come looking for me. You stay on the bench right there, and I'm looking at Paul. Paul's maybe 25, 28 yards from me, and I'm below him, though, but I can see him. And he's got his hat on backwards. I can see it all in my mind right now. I'll never forget this. He has his hat on. It's his lucky elk hat, baseball cap, but it's camo, and it's just sitting backwards. And he's sitting there on one knee like he's going to have something to eat. I mean, he just looks totally like nothing's going on. And so I bugle at this bull. I'm really trying to keep him riled up, and I just start raking this tree, raking it hard, and I scream another bugle. And about that time, I'm looking at my son, and he's barely taking an arrow out of his quiver. He's showing no emotion. He's just pulling it out, and he's slowly knocking it on there. And I'm looking at him as I'm trying to keep contact with this bull, and, I mean, this bull's coming fast. Now all of a sudden this bull bugles, and, I mean, he's not even 50 yards away from me. And I assume you all might see him now. It's kind of a burn as the bull's coming through. And I can hear his horns hitting everything. And I scream a bugle, and I'm behind this fir tree. And fir trees grow to the ground. And that was a tree I picked. And so I am thrashing this thing and thrashing and trying to give him a visual, trying to give the bull a visual. And here he comes. He walks right to the edge. And, I mean, this bull is like 25 yards from me. And he is just screaming a bugle right there. And I'm raking this tree, and I see my son at full draw. He's holding. And this bull is right, I'm point-blank range. And bull has no idea he's even there. And I should have mentioned, I saw Paul draw as the bull was coming, and he's just sitting there, holding. And he's not shooting. And I'm thinking, what the crap? I mean, he might have something right there in the way that I can't see. And I'm trying to look through the branches, so I'm trying to move over to the opposite side of the tree to pull the bull over, thinking, okay, he has no shot. I got to get him to change position. And so I started getting on the other side of the tree, creeping the best I could, and I turned around and bugled hard and just started thrashing the tree, trying to get the bull to move. And the bull just unleashes a bugle. I mean, right over the top of my head, which, I mean, you know, I mean, when they're that close.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Bull, I can see him. And I'm like, he is broadside to Paul. What is going on? And this bull just screams a bugle. And all of a sudden, I hear the arrow fly. And right when it did, I saw the bull. He just kind of froze. He was one of those he locked up, like he wasn't sure what happened. He didn't say anything. He turned around and he walked maybe 10 yards. And he looked like he was walking on two legs. I mean, he was just wobbling. Oh, and boom, he fell right over right there. And I'm looking at him like,
that's
what
awesome.
I'm going back up to my son, you know, kind of hand signaling like the bull's down and he's kind of giving me a thumbs up. Like nothing. You know, I mean, most guys are like, oh, man, hanging her bow in the air. Not Paul, not him, not even, and he still doesn't do that today. But, okay, so now I walk back to him. I'm walking back up the hill. I'm like, man, the bull's right there. He just crashed right in front of him. You know, I'm all excited about it. And I walk up there, and I said, man, what happened? I said, when I pulled him down and he came on the bench right there, I could see him. He looked, he was broadside. There's no, I mean, what happened? I mean, I was trying to get around to see. I said, was he in the open? He goes, yeah, he was in the open. He was completely open right there. It was a simple shot. I go, well, then why didn't you shoot him? What was taking so long? He goes, I wanted to give him one last bugle, Dad. I said, what? And that's what he told me. He goes, I want to give him one more, and then I'll go ahead and shoot him. And that was what he told me. And I was awesome. I don't even think I could say a word. I was just like, you want to give him one last bugle? Are you kidding me? And he did.
Awesome.
And I think, you know
that's
what?
Awesome.
I really think that that was why that bull didn't go anywhere. I think that when Paul let him bugle. He expelled the air out of his lungs, which that was not his intent, of course. But when he shot him, I mean, he just blew it right through both lungs, sticking in the ground on the other side, that he couldn't bring any more air in. And so it was just like he walked like he was, like a dead guy walking. I mean, he just plopped right over, like I say. He maybe went 10 yards. And this bull was 320-inch bull. On August the 30th, you never know when they're going to bugle. Of course, he was all hard-horned out. But it was one of the nicest Idaho bulls he had ever taken. And it happened to be on August 30th and bugled that guy right across, all because he ran at his cows, exploded them out of there. You know, if I would just ran up there and start cow calling, making them, I doubt he would have ever came like that. But it was just the first thing that came to me was I got to get him out of there and let him know, the real bull, why those cows are running. And and of course it worked. And we've done similar things since then. I mean, that was, like I said, when Paul was about 16, he's 40 now. And so a lot of years have went by and we've used similar things like that. But you know, sometimes that is the answer, or that's the first thing that comes to me. But to remember that account, and why he did not shoot that bull right off the bat when he said, I wanted to give him one last view. I was just, I don't even think I had any words for it.
That's awesome.
I was just like, who the hell would ever do that? It's so hard to get a good bull like that in front of you, and you're trying to give him one last bugle? And, oh, my goodness. So that stuck in my mind forever, that story. And, and, you know, they don't get any truer than that. I mean, he just, that's what he wanted to do. And I was just... I don't even know what to say. I remember it just like it happened yesterday. I could see the entire thing unveiling right there in front of my eyes as I'm telling you the story. But it was pretty good.
That's awesome. No, that's an awesome. You painted a good picture, too. You're a good storyteller. I could see it all. I could see it all unfolding. No, that's cool, man. That's a great story.
Oh, it was a good one. No, it was good. And you know what's really nice about one of those when you're building memories like that, especially with your son, you know, it's a bonding thing. And even though it all came together like that, this bull came in so vocal that he was not hard to track. I did not need to see it. But I felt like in my mind's eye, I could see that bull coming the full 300 yards. I feel like I could. You know, when he's talking like that and you're calling and you're prodding him, and all of a sudden, there he was right there, and I could see his whole rack, his whole chest, his whole neck. He's only 25 yards from me, and I could see him just standing there staring at me, staring. And, you know, he knew that bull was right there. I mean, I knew, and I was raking like crazy trying to keep his attention, thinking Paul was going to shoot any second. And I don't even remember how long the bull stood there. It probably really wasn't over 15 seconds, but it felt like it was an eternity.
Yeah, it felt like forever.
You know? Well, because he was just sitting there full draw, just nothing.
Yeah.
And it was just, and that bull never did know he was there. He had no clue that Paul was right there. But it worked great. The setup was good. I left Paul on the bench. I crept just over it, not very far, but just right on the edge on it, almost like the side heel, and found good cover, good tree. And all it took was just the challenges along with the raking. And I never used one cow sound, nothing whatsoever. He came in so fast to it. There was really no reason to say, okay, I'm going to inject this sound and this and this. You don't need to do all that. Not when one's that aggressive. But anyway, it was fun just being able to live it with your son like that and to experience it. And I know even today he does not forget that story. I mean, he knows, he remembers that elk just like I do.
Yeah, I can imagine. 16 years old, that's a great story. I got a question.
Yeah.
What do you when you're raking a tree? What are you doing? Just picking up a branch to rake it, or are you carrying an antler with you?
No, I just usually pick up some deadfall that's right there.
Okay.
And yeah, that's what I'm doing and raking and when the bull's coming, I lessen it up. I try to do it so he can hear it at the distance he's coming. And really, I don't think that bull even heard it. You know, you just kind of going through the motions. I don't think he heard it until he was probably 50 yards away. I mean, he was just hammering. I mean, this thing is so full of downfall. And for him to come down what he came through, I mean, it was amazing for the amount of speed he had. He went through stuff like it wasn't even there. And there was there was no stopping him. And what gets me is how far away he was from those cows. I mean, this bull was at least 300 yards from him. But and there's no doubt in my mind, there really was no hot cow at that time, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
He just didn't like that other bull there. And, I mean, when he decided to come, and it took three bugles to get him. you know, before it fired him up, and he just ignited and down he came. And once he made his mind up, but as far as raking, yeah, I mean, I was raking and raking and moving. And when I'm raking, I try to do a lot of the, with the piece of wood I choose, I try to hit the wood on the tree a lot. And I think a lot of people are trying to hit the branches and the brushy stuff, but it not only doesn't carry volume, you know, any distance. I mean, I like hitting it and clink, getting that wood, clink, plunk, plunk, clink, like rack. If you ever heard elk, you know, either sparring or raking tree, man, you can hear them hitting it. And it's just, I don't know, until you're right there doing it, it's hard to say what that actual sound is, but just by giving them that realistic sound right there, I think to me is very important, because if you're just brushing the branches and the pine needles and stuff, they almost need to be right there on top of you so they can see the movement. Mm-hmm. I got another story for you if you want one.
Yeah, go ahead.
And like you got something you want to say there, I don't want to just...
No. Nobody wants to hear my stories.
Well, this was another one that I was actually thinking of as I was telling that one, because this one to me, it was more comical, and I'll just tell the story. We are coming. One of the rare times we went behind a gated logging road because there was nobody parked there, and we've been down this road before. But a lot of times we go one of them times and you want to hunt it, and there's, you know, half a dozen rigs there. Well, it happened to be one weekday we get over there, and there was nobody there. And a lot of times we'll call from the road, and that's kind of, you know, while it's still dark, and try to locate elk, which I've, you know, discussed that with you in the past, because it's so productive. Well, we were doing that day, and when we got to the end where there was a gate there was nobody there. So we thought, let's just walk this thing out. It goes out about 2.5 miles. And if you get anything, you can now branch off, because it just dead ends and there's no trail. There's nothing out here. I mean, we're talking no man's land, and we like country like that. So, and it's steep to get out of there. Once you get to the end of the road, if you would want to go further, it's just steep, rough, rugged country. So we decide we're going to do that. I bugled here and there as we're going down the road. And the reason I was bugling is because it was Paul's turn to shoot. And so we always take turns. The day is his. That's it. I don't care how many elk we come into or how many we don't. It's his day. And so that's how we trade off. And anyway, we're heading down, and we finally get a bull to bugle, and he's way above us. He's probably a half a mile, and he's to our left. And so we say, okay, let's go ahead and we're going to, you know, go after this guy. And he's moving. You can hear him bugle after he called. And then when he bugled again, it sounded like he was maybe 7,500 yards further. So we knew he was heading to his bed. And so we said, okay, we got to get on this bull and try to keep him going. Well, next thing you know, another bull's bugling. So now there's two bulls, so now we shut up. I went, okay, we got the perfect scenario going. They're answering each other. And one of them really isn't moving far, but he's down in what we call the elk trail. It's a name we've given this spot. So I can say it here because nobody will ever know where it is. and this bull is coming from that spot, and you can hear it from there a mile away. You have to be in the right area, but we knew that spot. And so this other bull kept running up. He's going up higher, higher, but he kept, you know, bugling back and forth to this bull. And as he's going up and he's getting bit more distance from him, see, that tells you right now that that's both those guys got cows. Because this guy was not getting any closer to the other bull on the elk trail. Not even close. And they kept bugling, though, and separating. So I knew they both had cows. There was a good chance of it. You know, nothing ever written in stone there, but that's what it appeared to be. So anyway, so we start heading up. 45 minutes later, we get to what we figure, we got to be really close to this bull. We can hear them bugle, but they've calmed down a little bit. They're not as vocal as they were. Now it's like every 10 minutes or so, one will spit out. And they were almost just giving like advertising-type bugles. They were not challenging one another. It was like they were searching for any cows in the area to come to them, to their spot. And the other bull would bugle. And then the other bull would bugle. I mean, but nothing, they weren't even close to each other. It wasn't like there was confrontation. So anyway, we thought this was perfect. Well, see, this guy's the closest right here. This is the one. We are not going to the elk trail one. It was just a downfall menagerie to try to get to this guy. And we knew this other one had a lot of thick stuff, so we'll try him. So now, like I say, Paul's a shooter. We get about I would say we thought we were like 50 yards from him, but it's thick. You can't see anything. So
right.
I told Paul, I said, just sit right here. There's a little bit of an opening right here. And I'm going to creep back and I'm going to see if I can call this elk out to you and see what he does. And so he says, okay. You know, so that's what we do. We set up. And so, and I know what these guys were looking for. They were looking for cows. There's no question in my mind. So I thought, okay, I'm not going to use a bugle on this guy. Not to.
I lost you.
I'm assuming Paul was about 50 yards from the bull right in there, but it was really hard to say. So I got behind him probably 30 yards or so, and I thought, okay, I'm going to give some cow calls and see if this guy responds to it. So I gave two little soft cow calls just to see if he would recognize it and try to call me to him. He didn't say anything. I said, what? So I wait. I give a few more cow calls. Nothing. So I just wait. Now I wait another minute. Nothing's going on. I see my son up there. So I can see his body language. Nothing was going on. He has an arrow knock. And so I give three more cow calls. And finally the bull just gave some slight chuckles. And so he was just, you know, giving those little ape-like ones real soft. And he just called him the cow, giving her a direction. No nervousness, no problem.
Right.
And so I wait. I wait a minute. I call again. He answers again. He hasn't moved an inch. Nothing. And like, okay, I got to get some distance between us. I got to start moving. So now I start creeping back. I'm going to try to retreat and pull the bull into my son. So now I pull back. I do a little bit more calling. Bull's not saying much. I pull back. He's still not saying much. And I just creep away from him. Now I'm 150 yards away. I mean, I'm really creeping away, making it real cracks and popping things, moving, calling. Every once in a while, he'll make a little sound, but I could tell he hasn't moved. And I'm like, what the heck is this bull doing? So now I'm sitting back there, and I'm calling a little bit just sparingly, but I'm trying to call the bull to me. I'm kind of going more to regathering sounds, more instead of just a cow sound. I'm trying to give him a little bit more to call him over. He ain't buying it. Now all of a sudden, the next time he bugles, I thought, wait a minute, that bull's a little further than he was. And maybe Paul's slipping in on him, and he's trying to get over there to, you know, to get this bull. So I wait there. I call a little bit more. Bull answers again, and I'm going, that bull's even further. I'm like, what is going on here? And so now I'm like 175 yards or so roughly from this bull from where I hear him. And I say to myself, I'm thinking, is Paul slipping in? Maybe he got locked up right there because it was thick. And I'm thinking, maybe he can't move and he got pinned. That's what it is.
Right.
I mean, he's smart enough to know that he needs to get over there.
Right.
And so I'm waiting, you know, and you know, all these things are going through your mind as you're trying to call a bull up or, you know, keep contact made. It isn't just you throw a few sounds out there and just hope something comes running. No. And so as I feel he's going over the edge and he's just creeping away from me, I think, man, I got to make something happen. Paul got hung up is what it is. So now I decide I have to go running at this bull. And I'm going to cow call my way to him and hope he gets excited and starts calling me to him. So I start going at him. When I say run, I mean, I'm just moving kind of quick, going over the downfall.
Right, right.
I'm hitting everything I can with my hands and my feet. I have my bow in my left hand, and I'm kicking. I'm literally hitting things. And now that's the sound I'm going to, because that's what a cow will do. When a cow, she'll make a sound like this right here. As she accepts the invite, oh, I've seen him do it so many times, and they run right at the bull. So I'm hitting him with this sound now, letting him know that this is something he should expect to hear at that time. And
right.
As I'm going at him, he just picks it up. Now he's just calling like crazy as I'm kicking, popping. And I mean, I'm at 175, 150, 125. And as I'm going toward the bull, I'm going just a little bit lower than where my son was because I knew of that willow thicket. And I'm thinking, where the heck is he? He's got to be hearing all this. What's going on? And so I keep going down low, and the bull's holding position now. And now I'm like 50 yards, 40 yards from where the bull is calling. And I'm thinking, man, this is it. And I'm shooting a longbow. And so I thought, okay, I'm knocking an arrow right now. Paul was shooting a recurve, and I had the longbow. And as I get down low, I'm sitting there. And, man, I was just kicking everything as I got to 40 yards, letting him know I was coming. Now I'm just waiting, and I'm looking. I see nothing, so I start creeping up a little bit more. I get to about 35 yards. I'm moving slow, and I'm keeping every piece of cover I can. I'm like, I heard that bull right here. He can't be anywhere. He's right there. And so I'm looking, right. I'm getting ready to step out from the fur. And I think, well, I better look a little bit better. And I'm staring at the same time thinking, man, where is Paul? I mean, he's got to be right here. And I don't see him. And so I'm looking through the trees, and I look through, and I'm looking downhill now. The bull is about 25 to 30 feet below me, and there's a downfall log there, big, big old log, like a ponderosa. And all I can see is the bull's nose, his eyes, his ears, and a six-point rack was sticking out, staring right at me. And I'm like, oh, no, if I would have walked out from that tree, I was dead meat. And I'm just sitting there. I've got the bow, my fingers on the string, and I'm just sitting there staring through the bow and through the limb. Just, it was a stare down. And the bull's just staring. He's not moving. He's not saying anything. And I'm like, oh, man, what am I going to do? So I'm not moving. All of a sudden, the bull decides that I'm not a threat. I must be the cow. He hops up and jumps, leaps over this log. He's over the log, and he starts walking right up towards me. And I'm like, oh, my God, are you kidding me? No way. So now he comes up, and now he's standing at what I know today is 17 yards. He's standing right there, and when he does, he's looking away from me, and his vitals are sitting there broadside, and there is a twig coming off of a downfall log that is going right across, kind of horizontal. It's kind of in an angle, and it's going right across his vitals. With a compound, I wouldn't even – thought a second about not killing that bull right there. But with the longbow, I was like, gosh, you know, you got the trajectory, you got this, and it's just right there in my way. And I'm like, man, I can't make the shot. I don't want to risk it and then just shove it through his gut. So I just wait.
Oh. I lost you, Paul.
He's still standing there, and he's looking around, and all of a sudden he bugles. He's looking for the cow. And I'm like, oh, how awesome is that? He's standing there at 17 yards. And he's looking right past me. And he just screams that bugle, and he watches and looks. Nothing. Well, instead of walking to my left, I needed him to walk to my left a little bit, he turns around, and he walks straight to an aspen tree. And when he walks to the aspen tree, and it's a big aspen, this is like a 12-incher, he starts raking it. And you could hear him popping that wood. He's doing it mostly with his brow tines. And I'm looking right at him, and he's just digging it and digging it. And he's actually standing back there and hitting it with the brow tines and then digging. He's not setting them up against and just rubbing. He's hitting this thing. And I'm like, man, he's just slamming it. And I'm behind this tree. I'm thinking, this is my only chance. To my right, 3 feet to my right, is a granite slab. I'm thinking, I got to get on this granite slab. Move real slow, get on. I'll be right in the open, but he doesn't know I'm there. And once he turns from raking, I am right on top of this bull. And so I jump up on the slab. I mean, I should say gently. I didn't want to make a quick move. I didn't want him to see me. And so I slowly get out, and I'm watching him the whole time, but I'm seeing his ass end. He's not looking. It's not broadside. And he finally gets done digging out the tree, and he bugles again. He was displaying for the cow. He's trying to show off. He's trying to draw her, encourage her up. And so as he stops, he turns around, and now he's facing me as a frontal. He's just standing there. And I'm thinking, oh, if you go to the left, I got nothing. He walks right into a thicket. And I did want to try a frontal. Now he's still probably 25. And I'm like, no way would I have a chance to even draw the longbow, try to settle it, hit him there at 25. I mean, there was just no way. And so, and of course, I'm not at full draw because I'm shooting a longbow. So I'm waiting, and I'm just staring at him. Don't go left. Don't go left. And he starts walking back toward me, and he decides he wants to go back where he came from because he knows it's safe. And that's what they do. They go that secure way where they know there was no threat. So as he walks by, he goes right by that same limb at about 17 yards, and right as he pushes his front leg, I just kind of give a little bit of a just a little bit of a squeal, and he stops, and he's 100% broadside. And as he does, he turns, and he looks right at me, and I sent the arrow right through his heart. I just went, wham, wham, just that quick. I mean, 17 yards, not very far.
Yeah.
And it whistled through him. I heard him. I saw him run over the hill. As soon as he went into where the log area was, I could see him go over. And when he did, I could tell that he was on his feet. And so, oh, yeah. And so, I mean, that was just so exciting to see him barrel off. And that is exactly, I didn't know right at the time, but that is right where he died. He died actually roughly 50 yards away as he rolled down the hill. But now I'm standing there thinking, man, where was Paul? I mean, man, I just saw that bull. And I turn around, and he's standing right there. I mean, he's standing 1 foot from me. And man, that is an awesome shot. And I was like, where the hell
crazy.
Were you? I tried to get this bull for you. What were you doing? He says, I was ready to kill that bull when you ran by me. I said, what? He says, yeah, I'm standing 30 yards from this bull. And he says, he's walking, he's moving, and then all of a sudden I could hear you coming, crashing, running, calling, running. And you went right by me, and I threw a rock at you and hit you in the back of the leg. I said, you're going to be kidding me. He goes, you know, I hit you right in the leg, and I thought, that'll stop him. He's going to blow that bull out of there. I was hitting so much stuff running through there, I never even felt that rock hit me in the back of the leg. Hit me right in the calf,
crazy.
He said. Oh, and so nice. Anyway, he says, I saw you go right over there. He says, I sit there watching the bull rake the aspen. He said, if that bull would have stayed to his left, he said, I would have had him at under 20 yards. He said, I was just to the left of you in the timber. I kept sneaking in as you were calling. And I just got, you know, I just thought the bull was getting away because originally, like I said, I thought they were creeping. He was creeping away. Well, Paul had been creeping in on him. And yeah, and so now that's him. He says, that's the first time my caller ever ran past me to kill the bull out from underneath. But anyway, it was just a funny thing, you know, and it's a father and son thing. So, I mean, it's not a big deal, but at the same time, I look for him everywhere. But I guess I got pretty focused on the bull at the last second.
Right. No, that's a great story, though. That's funny. Did I lose you, Paul?
I keep hitting that darn mute thing. But anyway, I mean, that's a true story. I mean, how do you make that stuff up and go right by there? And so we ended up getting that bull, but oh, my goodness. Sometimes, you know, great. Things like this come into play, and you just remember those things. That's just all there is to it.
No, that's a good story. That's an awesome story, actually. Well, man, I want to thank you for coming on and sharing those stories with us. I think there's actually a lot of takeaway from those, besides them being very entertaining. I wish you luck on your elk season. I hope everything goes well for you guys. And
no, I appreciate that. Yeah, we actually have three wounded warriors that were taken out with the XO Mountain Pack guys. We're all going to go out together, and Paul and I are going to do some calling for them. So we look forward to that. And, yeah, good luck to you this year too, John.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Yeah, I'm as far as elk is concerned, I have Oregon the first week of September for Roosevelt. Mm. And then I come back to Arizona. I have a client here for our archery season. And then I'll actually be in, I think I told you this story, I'll be in Idaho for the BTAG rifle.
Right, rifle, yeah.
So, yeah, so.
Well, you've got a pretty busy year, that's for sure.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's only good. My elk hunts.
but it'll keep you out of trouble for a while. So then you go on your deer hunts and whatever else you got, huh?
Yeah, well, I leave this week for you, or not this week, beginning part of next week. For Utah, I have a deer tag there, so I got that first right before, and then when I get back from that, I'll have a week or about almost 2 weeks before a week before my Oregon hunt, and then I come home for a week, and then I got the other elk hunt, and it's like from pretty much from here on out, it's like week away, week home, week away, week home. So
that's the lifestyle of the rich and famous.
Yeah. Yep, exactly. So not
that's
rich.
All good. None of us are in this industry, so to speak, to get rich. It's just we have a passion for it. We enjoy it. I enjoy helping others so much that if that's all I ever did from here on out, I could care less. I really enjoy seeing, you know, people be successful and their appreciation. And I'll tell you something, most hunters out there are good people. They really are. They're just really good-hearted individuals, and I enjoy being around them.
Likewise. Well, awesome. I'll talk to you soon, and maybe when I come out to Idaho, I can hook up with you for a day or so.
You never know, man. You need to get in touch with me.
I will.
We can go from there, absolutely.
All right. Sounds good.
All right. Thanks a lot for having me on, John.
You're welcome. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
It's time to announce this month's Onyx Maps winner, Zach Flake. Congratulations, bud. Give me a shout on the blog or hit me up on Facebook or Instagram, and we'll get you out that free Onyx Maps membership. Hey, guys. Want to stay connected with the podcast? Check out my blog, johnstallone.me. That's www.johnstallone.me. And you could go on there. On the top right-hand corner, there's a little subscribe box. Quickly put in an email address, hit subscribe, and boom, you're done. There's a lot of great information on there, a lot of posts that go hand-in-hand with the podcast that we do, plus gear reviews, plus we have the signature T-shirts on there, the I Eat Fast Food T-shirts, and the Tuesday Coosday shirts. It's a really good way to stay connected with the podcast. And thanks for listening.